ജയം വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയ ചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാജ് ശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം നിത്യലീല പ്രവിഷ്ട വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തിസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാജ് ശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശീല ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗര ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ട് ഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനയ്ക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാംക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാംക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാംക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ് പുരി ധാംക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാംക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗോർ പ്രേമാനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരു ആൻഡ് ശ്രീ ഗൗരംഗ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ശീല പ്രഭു നമോ വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിനിധി നാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവി ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണേ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ സംസാരസാഗരേ മഗ്നം ദീനം മാം കരുണാനിധി കർമ്മഗ്രാഹഗ്രഹീതാംഗം മാം ഉദ്ധരമവാർണവാൽ ശ്രീമൽഭാഗവതാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷ കൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാനാഥ മുക്തിർത്ഥം ഭവസാഗരേ മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സഫല സർവദാ ത്വയ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവ ഭവേ ഭവേ യദാ ഭക്തി പാദയോർസ്തവ ജായതേ തഥാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശാ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോ യത് പ്രഭോ നാമസങ്കീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവഭാവപ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമന തം നമാമി ഹരിം പരം ജന്മാദ്യസയതോന്വയാദിതരതശ്ചാർത്തേഷ്വഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാൾ തേനേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദായ ആദികവയേ മുഹ്യന്തിയൽ സൂരയ തേജോ വാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷാധാംനാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തഭോഗം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി ധർമ്മപ്രോജിതകൈതവോത്രപരമോ നിർമ്മത്സരാണം സദാം വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമുത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനികൃതേ കിം വാവരൈരീശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യവരുദ്ധ്യേത്രകൃതി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭീ തൽക്ഷണാൽ നിഗമകൽപ്പതരോർഗളിതം ഫലം ശുഖമുഖാദമൃതദ്രവ സംയുതം പിബത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം ഹുരഹോരസിയാ ഭുവി ഭാവുകാഹ സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപ്പത്യാദിഹേതവേ താപത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നുമ യം പ്രവ്രജന്തമനുപേതമപേതകൃത്യം ദ്വൈവാഹിനോ വിരഹകാതരമജ്ജുഹാവ പുത്രേതി തന്മയതയത്തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിമാനതോസ്മി യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖില ശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപം അതിദിദീർഷദം തമന്ധം സംസാരിണാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനുമുപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ജൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയേ കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കളവേണുക്കുണിതാദൃതാനനേന്ദോഹ മമ വാചി വിജൃംഭദാം മുരാരേ മധുരീം നക്കണികാഭി കാപികാഭി നമാ ഓം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമദേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിനിധി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവേ ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണേ ശ്രീമൽ ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ വന്ദേ നന്ദവ്രജ ശ്രീനാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ യാസാം ഹരിഗതോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദി ഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീ ചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാനുവേ നമ പീതാംബരം കരുവിരാജ ശംഖചക്രം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായം അതിസുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വാതാലേശമനിശം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി കോമളം കൂജയൻ വേണം ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണീ ഭഗവതി അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനീ മമ്പത്വാ മനസന്ദദാമി ഭഗവത്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണി നമോസ്തുതേ വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധേ ഫുല്ലാരവിന്ദായത് പത്രനേത്ര യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപ പ്രപന്നപാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേ ത്രൈകവാണയ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമ സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോദോ ഗാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോവത്സസുധീർഭോക്താദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത് വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസചാണൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാജേദ്രജലാഗാന്ധാരനീലോൽപലശല്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ വഹനീ കർണേന വേലാകുല അശ്വത്ഥാമാ വികർണ ഘോരമകരാ ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനീ സോതീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണനദീ കൈവർത്തകേശവ പാരാശര്യവജസരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനഗജസരം ഹരിഗദ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഹ പേവീയമാനം മുദാ ഭൂയാത് ഭാരതപങ്കജക്കലിമലപ്രധ്വംസിനശ്രേയസേ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുദസ്വന്നുന്തി ദിവ്യൈ സവൈർവേദൈ സംഗമദൈ ക്രമോപനിഷദൈർഗായന്തി യം സാമഗാഃ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിതദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ യോന്തപ്രവിശ്യ മമ വാചം ഇമാമ്രസുപ്തം സഞ്ജീവയത്തകില ശക്തിധരസ്വധാംനാം അന്യാംശഹസ്തചരണശ്രുണാം തുകാദീൻ പ്രാണാന് നമോ ഭഗവതേ പരുഷായ തുഭ്യം ഭൂതേർമഹദ്ബ്രഹ്മാ പുരോ വിഭുർനിർമായ ശേതയതമൂഷു പൂരുഷാ മുക്തേ ഗുണാൻ ഷോഡശ ഷോഡശാത്മകം സോലം കൃഷിഷ്ഠ ഭഗവാൻ ഭജാംസി മേ. So, we're talking about Chadishlogi last time, isn't it? So, I mentioned there that this was revealed to Brahma in the heart. Not that Brahma has personally traveled to Vaikuntham or anything. It was revealed to him. How do we know that? If you look at the first verse itself, it is spoken. Which one? Janmadhyasayataha. If you look at there, you will find Tene Brahma Hridaya. It was revealed to him in the heart. That's how it is said, isn't it? So that means the Tene Brahma Hridaya Adigavaye Muhyandiyal Suraya. Second line in the first verse. So from there you can understand that this Chadishlogi, which is actually a Upadesham, it is. Out of Katha, Stuti, Upadesham. Chadishlogi is an Upadesham actually. It's a direct instructions to Brahma. So this Upadesham was given to Lord Brahma inside the heart, within him. It was revealed to him inside. That is why it is mentioned in the first verse itself, Tene Brahma Hruda Ya Adigave. Brahma's heart it was given, not otherwise. So it's on that basis it is said like that. Then we saw there at the end of that chapter that the spoke about the fifth chapter. On the fifth chapter we saw there that based on Purusha Suktam prayers spoken about the creation process, right? And whatever that has been created, maintaining it in the same way for some time is called sthiti, maintenance. Srishti is creation. Sthiti is maintenance. Maintenance means what has been created that is being maintained in the same way, and whatever that was created, the way it was created, and if you have the reverse process of that is dissolution or devastation. Dissolution or devastation, that's what it is. So creation is one way, destruction is the opposite way. From one thing to another it has come and it goes back in the same order back to the source again. So that is how dissolution is spoken. So from creation you have to understand maintenance and dissolution. From creation, right? In the seventh chapter the different incarnations were spoken, especially in detail about the Krishna Swarupam, what it is. Then he told Narada Maharshi at the end of that you should expand this Bhagavadam, who Brahma said to Narada Maharshi, you should expand this Bhagavadam, and ultimate goal is that it develops bhakti in the heart. Samgrahihoyam vibhudinam tumedad vibili guru. That's how he said, right? And in that way, Brahma made it very clear to him that the next process is that the goal of all this is to develop bhakti in the heart of those who are hearing Bhagavatam. They should develop bhakti in the heart. That's the way it should be spoken, right? So whether it is jnana margam, yoga margam or bhakti, everything, unless it is executed with bhakti, it has no value. Whether it is jnana margam or yoga margam, unless it is executed with bhakti. So with bhakti, everything should be done, right? And if you ignore bhakti, if you don't take into consideration bhakti, but everything is done with false ego, ahankaram inside, then it won't give any benefit to anybody. He made it very clear there in that verses at the end of eighth chapter, I think. Sangrahoyam vibhudinam. Yeah, it is at the end of seventh chapter. Idam bhagavadam namam yanme bhagavadodidam sangrahoyam vibhudinam tumedam vibhuli guru yada haraur bhagavati nirnam bhaktir bhavishyati sarvatman akhilaadharam iti sankalpa varnaya. Then he mentions that at the end of that, he said that one can accept the sadhana process, what suits oneself, and bhakti means without any duplicity, attraction to Krishna, attachment to Krishna, and that means even sadhana also should not be done as a sort of a shouldn't be done as a sort of a ritual or as a karma. It shouldn't be performed, right? And that will only become that will become a sort of a display of your own ahankaram, ego inside, right? And that sadhana won't bring any results from that. So any sadhana, if it is executed with bhakti, it will have its benefit. And Sri Narada Maharshi is handed over that responsibility to Vedavyas to explain it properly, right? So he gave instructions to Vedavyas, and Vedavyas that discussion between Narada Maharshi and Vedavyas has happened. And so you can see, if you look at the order, that after Krishna comes Brahma, and then the next one is Narada Maharshi, right? Third person. The fourth one is Vedavyas. So Krishna, Brahma, Narada, Vyasa. Fourth one is Vyasa, right? Vedavyas. So, and Vedavyas expanded that and gave it to all of us, which is Srimad Bhagavatam now, what we are reading. And Vedavyas gave this Bhagavatam to Shukadeva Goswami, Shukabrahmarshi. And so the fifth person is Sukadeva Goswami. And then Sukadeva Goswami instructed that to Parikshit. So in that way, Parikshit has become the sixth person, all coming from one to another, right? Because at that moment, the parampara broke. When it came to from Krishna to Brahma, Brahma to Narada, Narada to Vyas, Vedavyas, Vedavyas to Sukadeva Goswami, and from Sukadeva Goswami, the parampara broke. Why? Because he was liberated already, and he left. He left. So, therefore, and also, Shukabrahmarshi left, and then Parikshit, after hearing Bhagavatam, he also got liberated. Parikshit left. So there was Parambara's name. In the Parambara, Bhagavata Parambara, Parikshit doesn't come. Because he got liberated and he left. And you don't see anywhere Parikshit instructing Bhagavatam to anybody there. Right? And he got liberated and left. And then Parikshit Maharaj who was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam very carefully, at that time, there was another person sitting there who was Ugrashravasa.
Ugrashravasa means one who has got very good capacity to hear. Ugrashravasa, shrava means hear. Ugrashravasa means who has got excellent capability to hear things and take it. And that capacity he had, that's why his name is Ugrashravasa. So Ugrashravasa was sitting there, and Ugrashravasa was the son of Ramaharshana. So Ugrashravasa was sitting in one corner, and Sri Shukla Brahmarshi said at the end of the Bhagavatam that he pointing out to him that it was almost coming to an end of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he told him that this Ugrashravasa will speak Srimad Bhagavatam in Naimisharanyam later. Those who want to hear, they can go to Naimisharanyam to hear Bhagavatam. So that is the very end of that. Sri Shukla Brahmarshi is speaking to Parikshit Maharaj, and then with the fifth chapter in the 12th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam finishes there. Sri Shukla Brahmarshi walked away from there, right? And then it is in the fourth chapter, 12th canto, fourth chapter, that Suda Goswami, or this Ugrashravasa, who is Suta Goswami, he will go to Naimisharanyam and will speak Srimad Bhagavatam there. And he was authorized to do so by Sri Shukla Brahmarshi. And that he has spoken in the fourth chapter before he left. Who? Shukla Brahmarshi. Before he left, he authorized Suta Goswami to speak Srimad Bhagavatam in Naimisharanyam later to other rishis present there. So, just like Parikshit Maharaj was accepted as a disciple of Sri Shukla Brahmarshi, in the same way, he has accepted Suda Goswami also as a disciple, right? So, in that sense, you can say, the sixth guru in that Bhagavata Parambara is Suda Goswami. Krishna, Brahma, Narada, Vedavyas, Shukla Brahmarshi, and now Suda Goswami. He is the sixth one in the Parambara, right? So, he instructed in Naimisharanyam to all the rishis who are present there, this Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, through them, we have received Srimad Bhagavatam. It is through them, right? So it has started with Narayana. Bhagavatam began with Narayana. Narayana is the form who was instructed to Brahma. From Narayana it has begun. Brahma, Narada, Vedavyas, Sudeva Goswami, and now Ugrashravasa, the Sutan, right? There it finishes. So that's why, if you look into the 10th chapter, in the second canto, you'll see, Atrasargo Visargascha, Sthanam Poshanam Udaya, Manundaram Ishanukatha, Nirodho Mukhtir Ashraya, the first verse, right? So now it is interesting, because Bhagavatam is saying, 10 topics are discussed in the Bhagavatam, and that's what is listed in that. In the first verse, Sargam, Visargam, Sthanam, Poshanam, Udi, Manyandaram, Ishanagada, Nirodham, Mukti, Ashrayam. The 10 things, right? So, these 10 subjects, they are independent subjects of its own. They have no connection to each other, right? So, how come 10 topics were discussed in Bhagavatam, which has no relationship to each other? For example, if you discuss in a book, in a literature, if you discuss 10 topics which has no connection each other, one topic to other, then that book will not tell you what to do after that. Normally in a book you discuss one topic and you explain that topic in detail, that one topic. But here what you find in the Bhagavatam is 10 topics are spoken, all independent subjects. And then you are supposed to extract from that the message, from that book, right? So that is why in Shastram they call it Egarupatam. Egarupatam means that one message that has to come from the book, right? You can only say about Srimad Bhagavatam in that sense, that it's a combination of so many topics discussed, 10 different topics discussed, and it's a combination of various articles combined together in that way. Yeah, so in any book, suppose you are writing a book, there should be one topic which should be the main topic in the book. It is centered around everything else is spoken. But here what do you find? So many topics are discussed, 10 topics are discussed, and therefore one topic has no connection with the another one. I mean, one canto has no connection with the other, and therefore it is not does not have the same uniformity what you find in Ramayanam or Mahabharatam. In Ramayanam and Mahabharatam is different. Ramayanam, everything is centered around Ramachandra. Ramachandra's life in Ayodhya, Ramachandra's travels to a forest, Ramachandra's fighting with Ravana, and finally, you know, when Sita Devi was stolen, how she was brought back to Ayodhya, and then Ramachandra's rule in Ayodhya. So everything, if you read Ramayanam, you will get to know one topic, that is Ramachandra. Ramachandra is the topic of discussion in Ramayanam. In the same way, in Mahabharatam, if you look at it carefully, you will see it was a family fight between the Kauravas and the Pandavas, and what has resulted from that at the end. So everything is started from that, this fight between Kauravas and among the Kshatriyas, how they fought each other, and how it all developed into various problems, and finally Krishna was there in the middle of all that, and Krishna is instructing Bhagavad Gita. Everything is a part of that. So there is one topic that is discussed in Ramayanam and Mahabharatam. Bhagavatam is different. Bhagavatam, 10 topics are spoken, and you won't know what that relationship is, right? So, but how do we say then that Bhagavatam is talking about one subject? It is at that time, when you look at it, that they are all different topics, right? So, what that means is, that topics are not different. So to clarify that, the next verse in the Bhagavatam, you see, the second verse in the 10th chapter. Deshamasya vishuddhyartham namanamiha lakshanam varnayandi mahalpanam shudena arthena janjasa. That verse is spoken only to tell us how to understand Bhagavatam. Deshamasya vishuddhyartham namanamiha lakshanam varnayandi mahalpanam shudena arthena janjasa. What he is saying there is, actually there is only one topic in the Bhagavatam. What is that? that Bhagavatam's message is ashrayam. That means out of these 10, which one? Sargam, visargam, sthanam, boshanam, mudhiyam, anandaram, ishanikada, nirodham, mukti, ashrayam. There are 10 of them. Out of that, ashrayam is the topic of Bhagavatam. That is how you have to understand that. Ashrayam is the subject of Bhagavatam, and all other things, the 9 before that, means Sargam, Visargam, Sthanam, Poshanam, Udhim, Anandaram, Ishanikata, Nirodham, Mukti, is for the proper understanding of Ashrayam. For that purpose, the other 9 topics are discussed. Do you understand what I'm saying? That the Bhagavatam, when you read first time, you will think there's 10 topics are spoken in the Bhagavatam. Why? What does it mean? It means like this. That's what he's saying here very clearly. Deshamasya vishuddhyartham. It is the 10th topic that is the most important one. To get that 10th topic understood properly, navanamiha lakshanam. The 9 aspects of that 10th topic is what is discussed before. That means sargam, visargam, sthanam, poshanam, udhim, anandaram, ishanikata, nirodham, mukti has been discussed only to understand ashrayam. Only to understand ashrayam. Yeah. So, ashrayam is the main topic of Bhagavatam. Ashrayam is the main topic. So, that ashraya tattvam, in order to understand that, and for that purpose, the other 9 topics are spoken. So, all through these 9 topics, what is actually discussed is the 10th topic, which is ashraya. Ashraya means taking shelter. Taking shelter. So it is the 10th topic, ashrayam, is what is discussed in all the other 9 topics. Deshamasya vishuddhyartham namanamiha lakshanam. Right? So that ashraya tattva jnanam, that is the goal of Srimad Bhagavatam. Ultimate goal is to get this ashraya tattvam inside. Right? First of all, it has to be understood with intelligence. through our own intelligence, Ashraya Tattva Jnanam has to happen, and then after that you have to experience it, that Ashraya. You have to experience that, right? So that's what normally we say as Paroksha Jnanam and Aparoksha Jnanam, the two things, right? So it is for that purpose, all the topics that is discussed in the Bhagavatam, from Sargam onwards, that means creation onwards, and all other topics are spoken only for this one purpose, to get this ashrayam across to people, right? And ashrayam, what is ashrayam? Ashrayam is Brahmam. Ashrayam is Brahmam itself, right? How is no? If you look at the seventh verse, you will find there mentioned. Abhasascha nirodascha edascha dhyavasiyate sa ashraya param brahmam. Ashrayam of param brahmam. Ashrayam of param brahmam. Paramatmedi shabdyade. Brahmam, which is also known as paramatma, is ashrayam. And that is ashrayam. Ashrayam means taking shelter of brahmam or paramatma. That's what he's saying here. Sa ashrayascha param brahma. Paramatmedi shabdyade. Seventh verse. Yeah? So, ashrayam is brahmam, right? And abhasascha nirodhascha. So, what does that mean? Abhasascha nirodhascha means, from where this creation has come, and how this creation is present before us, the way we are perceiving it now, right? And how this creation goes back, goes away from here, it goes back to this person from where it has come, and that is the ashrayam. That is the ashrayam. Yeah, that means from Brahmam it has come, and it is. We are experiencing it because of the presence of Brahmam. Brahmam is underlying that. That Chaitanyam, Shuddha Chaitanyam, pure consciousness. It's his presence that we experience this creation. And then later on, this whole creation goes away, disappears from our experience. And that is when it goes back to Brahmam again. So this Brahma Tattvam is the one ashrayam, is the topic of discussion, main topic of discussion in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the goal of all this is Brahma Tattva Jnanam of the ashrayam, right? And that, first of all, we have to understand that tattvam properly with our intelligence. Intellectually, you got to get convinced first everything. Otherwise, it won't work. So, Paroksha Jnanam also has its own importance in spiritual life. First of all, we have to absorb the knowledge properly. Properly, it has to be absorbed. That's why not to deviate from the Shastram anywhere. Mental speculation should not happen. It should be based on the process, the way it is spoken in the Bhagavatam. It should be understood. And then after that, once the Buddhi has accepted it, then through sadhana, it has to make it your own. That's the way it is, right? Sadhana anushtanam, and through that make it as our own. And in that way, paroksham, aparoksham. Paroksham is the one what is realized through the, what is understood by the intelligence. Aparoksham is the one that makes it as your realization. Yeah. So in this way, Brahma Tattvam or Krishna, Bhagavan, in that way. In this way, Brahma Tattvam is the one that is spoken in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. There is no other topic. Everywhere what is spoken about is this Brahma Tattvam, right? Or Bhagavat Tattvam. So, Bhagavat Tattvam means what is Krishna? What is Brahmam? Swarupa Jnanam it is called. To knowing about something, it's Swarupam. What is it? When we say to somebody Krishna or Brahmam or Paramatma, what does that mean? That's Swarupa Jnanam. And then the knowledge of the pastimes of Brahmam, Brahmam's pastimes, Leela, Leela, Leela. And then how to become Brahman, realize the truth. So these three topics, sadhana, that means through sadhana, what process you are following, and that is the topic of discussion in the Bhagavadam. Veda Pradivadyam. So, in summary, it is Vedic's message of the Vedam is reviewed through Bhagavadam very carefully reviewed, and and this review happens in three ways. That's what he is saying there in the second verse. Shrudena Arthena Chanjasa, he says. Shrudena Arthena Chanjasa. So, Shrudi, Shrudena Arthena. So, Shrudi, directly hearing things, Shrudi, right? And through that, you are hearing the Brahma Tattvam. And this will be done through katha, through stories. Through stories it is done. And how to get the message from the story that we have spoken before, that in every pastimes, Sri Shukha Brahmarshi will say something in that pastime, what it relates to, that story relates to. What you have to learn from that story. Throughout Bhagavadam it is like that. From every lila, every pastime, something is there for us to take serious notice of, right? So, there is tattvam in katha. Tattvam is there in the katha. But in each story or katha, there will be some words which is pointing out the message in that particular pastime. And from that verse, you will have to understand the message of the pastime, the particular pastime, what it is pointing at, right? So, and that verse will be the essence of that particular pastime. The essence of that particular pastime will be that verse, right? So, katha will remain as katha, story will remain as story, and at the same time, katha should not be interpreted and purely spoken as dry philosophical speculation. Sometimes that people do. Some people, they say katha is not important anymore. We have got the message from the katha. And they will only talk about that tattvam side of it, not to talk about katha. And that is not correct. That's also not correct, right? In katha, you should not think it. There's only katha there, story only, because katha there is also other things spoken. So, of course, there are certain things which is related to self-realization, brahmajnanam, right? Generally, it will be there. That we have to understand. But it won't be like Stuti or Upadesham. Stuti or Upadesham. So, what you get from Stuti and Upadesham, you should not expect that from Katha. You shouldn't expect that, right? You can expect Tattva Jnanam in Katha and Stuti, Upadesham, whereas we'll have purely tattvajnanam in that. Yeah, purely tattvajnanam. But there is a difference between katha, studi and upadesham. Yeah. In Srimad Bhagavatam, the main topic is studi. Everything, if you study carefully and you start becoming a little bit thoughtful about it, you'll start seeing studi takes a major weight of the Bhagavatam. Studi carries it. Because it is through studi you get the tattvajnanam. Studi, you get the tattvajnanam. And it is that tattvajnanam has to be very deeply established inside. Only then your sadhana will work properly. Sadhana can only work if you are well convinced inside what you are doing is the right thing. And that conviction comes from the tattvajnanam. And that tattvajnanam has to happen in the buddhi first. In the buddhi first, right? So, the way tattvajnanam spoken in katha and tattvajnanam spoken in studi and upadesham is different. Is different, right? And that we have to recognize first, right? So, the spiritual traditions, spiritual masters, different acharyas, great devotees, all of them, they have already spoken how Bhagavatam should be spoken. There is a structure for that, right? Only then, if you do it proper way, then you will reach the ultimate goal, which is ashrayam, taking shelter, right? So, what we find now is sargam visargam. All this is talking about creation, sargam visargam. And karana srishti is sargam, karanam karyam, cause, effect. Karanam is the third canto, karyam is the fourth canto. Karanam is, or cause is behind it, and the effect is spoken later, right? And you can see from karanam came karyam. Karanam is all what Krishna has originally came from Brahman. Maya came. Mahatattvam, Ahamdattvam. And then the five elements. Indriyam, senses, mind, intelligence, material elements. All of them. That's all in the Karanam. And from there, Karyam came. The rest of the creation has come from that. Right? So. So, karyam is all the fourth canto, how the creation has come from that, and then how Krishna protects this creation, and also in the form of this fifth canto, what you find there is this karyam, what has come from karanam, which is the original causes of creation, primary creation, they call it in English, isn't it? It does not have the same effect as saying karanam. Primary creation, that's the title in the Bhagavatam, English. But Karanam is the actual topic of discussion there. And how, so after studying third and fourth canto, what has been created, how it is being maintained in a particular way, and that vibhuti of Krishna, able to keep it like this for some time. In Krishna's eyes, this is only some time. In our eyes, it's a very long time. This creation. How it is maintained in this way, that is called sthanam. That is why the name sthanam is used. So, and then after that, what you find? How the devotees are protected while in the sthanam. And that is what's called poshanam. Poshanam, right? And then how every jiva here, how it goes through different experiences in life due to its different vasanas. That's where the experiences are coming from. Every jiva, when it is passing through this world, it has different experiences. And these different experiences is due to its own vasana, what it has created. Vasana vaijitriyam, it's called. That means, when we are getting something in life, in different ways in our life, you can more or less take it that it's all due to the vasanas from previous life. That vasanas are maturing, and accordingly experiences are coming. Vasana Vajitriyam, right? And that Vasana Vajitriyam is called Udi. And Udi is also called Karma Vasana, isn't it? Udaya Karma Vasana, and that is the seventh canto. That's the seventh canto. Karma Vasana Vajitriyam. Then Sadharma Nirubanam is Manyundaram. That is the eighth canto. That how this system, what Krishna has, in Krishna, how this creation is manifesting in Krishna, in Brahman, how it's manifesting, and how it is maintained like that through a certain structure, Manus and others, right? Rishis, Saptarishis, Manus, Indra, Krishna's incarnation, Manus' children, all of them together, a setup is there already, and that is called Sadharma. That's the eighth canto. And then ninth canto is all history of devotees who have great personalities, not ordinary people, great personalities. And then, that is the ninth canto. And in the, after going through all that, when one's mind become free from the influence of this world, and getting attracted to the truth, that is called a nirodham. That means the mind, after studying Srimad Bhagavatam carefully, these 9 cantos, started realizing that there is no reality here. Actual reality is only Krishna. And Krishna means Brahman, Paramatma. And when you come to that realization, how our own mind withdraw from the world, has no attraction, and get completely focused on the truth. And that is called a nirodham. Nirodham is that state of mind, not you are forcefully withdrawing everything, but through your realization you are drawing back from the world, having understood from Bhagavatam, through these 8 cantos, or the 9 cantos, you have realized that there is no truth in this world. Actual reality is that Shuddha Chaitanyam, pure consciousness, Krishna. That's the only reality. And it is with that realization you are entering into the 10th canto. So, that is 10th canto. And so, nirodham. And after going through that 10th canto, having heard about Krishna, then inside you realize it, what should be my state of consciousness. And that is what is spoken liberation. That after going through all these 10 cantos, when you start realizing what should I be now after this. So this is all inside. Everything is inside, not outside. All these things are inside. It has changes that has to happen within us at different stages while studying Srimad Bhagavatam. So after studying all these 10 cantos, you come to realize that where should I be now? What is my state of consciousness should be? And that is state of liberation. Freedom from everything, right? So, and that is Ekadasha Skanda. So in this way, moksha sadhana, how one is come to the moksha sadhana. And if you ask the question that after liberation, what is the, then what happens? And then that is where ashrayam comes. That even at that stage, you cannot give up connection with Krishna. And that is why through moksha sadhana anishtanam, through that actual tattvam, you get established in that. And that is called ashrayam. So the ashraya tattvam is what is discussed in the 12th canto. That ashraya tattvam is so. So if you look at that 10th chapter in the Bhagavatam, in the 2nd canto, you'll see Shuka Brahmarshi defining every canto properly. Dashamasya vishuddhyartham navanamiha rakshanam varnayandi mahatmanam shudenarthena janjasa. Then he is saying each canto, what's he talking about? Bhudamatendridiyam janma sargam udahrida. What is sargam means? Brahmano gunavaishamyam visargam paurushasmrida. What is visargam means? Right? Then, next verse, 4th verse, sthiti vaigunta vijayam. That is what sthiti is, right? Poshanam tad anugraha. Poshanam is the 6th canto, right? Manandarani sadharma. 8th canto is manandaram. Manandara katha. Udaya karma vasana. 7th canto. 7th canto is Uri or Karmavasana, right? Avadarani charitam, Harishchas anuvartinam, sadam ishakata proktam, nana kyanampa brahmhida. 9th canto is Ishanu katha, of the great personalities who followed the process of self-realization in their life, how they reached that state. Yeah. Then, nirodasya anishayanam, atmana sahashaktipi, muktirhe tanyadharyupam, surubena vyavasthiti. Ekadasha Skandam is saying that, 10th canto is Nirodhasyani Shayanam, Atmana Sahashaktivi. That is 10th canto, Nirodham. Atmana Sahashaktivi, that realizing that Atma is the reality, soul is the only reality here, nothing else. And then Muktihi Tanyadharyupam Swarupena Vyavasthiti, and establishing oneself in the self, establishing or getting back our spiritual identity. That's what it's called. Muktihi tanyadha rupam swarupena vyavasthiti. And then abhasascha nirodascha yadascha dhyavasiyade sa ashraya param brahma paramatmedi shabhyade. That paramatma realization or brahmam realization or ashrayam is the ultimate goal of everything. So in this way, these verses from 1 to 7 will tell you about each canto, what it is being discussed. So if you keep all these things in mind, and then when you go into the Bhagavatam, you will find it making more sense. And you will see how Vedavyasa has compiled this, right? So what we are talking about is we were going back a little bit, that Brahma says to Narada Maharshi how the three types of creation has happened, which means adibhutam, adidevam, adhyalpam. So you remember before, right? So that is coming back again here. Why we find all these very complicated is because we are not used to thinking the way the rishis are talking about it. Our head is all screwed up with all the other useless things. And so when they say something, it all looks very foreign to us. That's the problem. Yeah. Adhyalpam, adhibhutam, adhidevam. We spoke before what they mean, isn't it? And as long as you don't know what they are, then this chapter will be very difficult. So, three types of creation he spoke, right? This jiva state where we are now, it is based on a jiva situation. These three types of things are spoken. Which one? Adhyalpam, adhibhutam, adhidevam, right? So, pranan, the power or the energy that's coming from the mahatattvam. And that pranan, through pranan creation begins. And when the jiva, when it starts its creation, jiva starts its creation, this pranan enters into these three. Which one? It comes in the senses as a power, sensual power. Then it comes through the mind as a mental power. And it comes through the body as a physical power. So these three things, which one? The body, the mind and the senses, they all require a strength, a support from Krishna. And that support is in the form of prana. Prana is the one which is supporting this. Prana. That's why I call it as life air in English translation. For pranan is life air, they call it. So, so it is this pranan that's keeping the jiva surviving in this gross and subtle body together, right? When we die, we say the pranavayu has gone. We say the life has left, isn't it? What does that mean? It means the pranan is not there anymore. That means jiva is not getting the support to stay inside that body, the proper support. That's prana. So prana is not there. So, it goes inside prana upanan, upanan comes out, right? And, or prana, what is inside, is enjoyed by all the senses. Senses gets its power from pranan. So, when this pranan is working inside, how do we know pranan is working? It is due to presence of pranan that you are feeling hunger and thirst in the gross body. Hunger, thirst is all because of pranan, right? So, you can see when the appropriate time comes, you feel hunger, you feel thirsty, right? So, that way... Then it says that in the tongue, jihwa, there these senses are there, rasanendriyam, which tastes, right? And in the throat, there is what they call it as the beginning of the tongue, where it begins from there, right? And there is the sense of rasanendriyam is present in there, right? So from there the indriyam is there, from there the tongue came out. The tongue came out from that, right? So here if you look, that the the mouth is the adhibhutam. If you look at adhyalpam, adhibhutam, adhidevam, And that means wherever the sense is present, that is where the adibhutam is. For example, the tongue is enjoying tastes, different taste. So tongue is operating because it is connected to that sense in the throat, which is the sense what is tasting everything. What is tasting everything, right? So that sense of taste is called adibhutam. Adibhutam. And the tongue is obviously meant for tasting things, and that is, therefore, it is its subject for tasting. So the sense is called adhyatmam, right? In other words, we'll put it like this. The indriyam is adhyatmam, and its power of which gives the energy for the indriyam to operate, pravarta shakti, that is the adhidevam. So, if you take that sense of taste, the adhidevam is varuna. Varuna is present there. That's why there's always water in the mouth, because of varuna's presence. Varuna is present in the mouth. That's why we have water in the mouth all the time. Once the water goes away, there is varuna is gone. That means you can't do anything with the tongue then. What use tongue then? So varuna's presence, varuna is the adhidevam. And the pravartaka shakti, or power that is operating that, is varuna. Right? And that sense inside, what is operating there? What's operating there? Rasanindriyam, right? That is adhyalpam. That is adhyalpam. And the sense or the indriyam that is present there is adhibhutam. Adhibhutam. So adhyalpam, adhibhutam, adhidevam is present in all senses, everywhere. Similarly for the eye also, for the nose, for the ears, for everything, right? So, so these three things together makes the tasting possible, anything, right? So, for example, when we want to speak, all these things have to operate. Otherwise you can't speak, isn't it? So, it says in the Bhagavatam that Viral Purusha, when he wanted to talk, it's all spoken on the basis of a human body, as a Virat Purusha. It's spoken in the form of a human body, right? So, according to the desire of the jiva, the different senses were created. Not that creation, its senses were created and then a human body has come. Human body's vasana decided what type of senses were required. Do you understand? That not that senses were first manufactured, like a car, you manufacture a car, and then they tell you to drive in a particular way. It's not like that. Because depending on the vasanas inside, for that vasanas to experience its goal or the sense object, different senses were created for that purpose, depending on the vasanas inside. That is how these five senses has come about. Yeah. So when the person wanted to express himself, the tongue came out. When the person wanted to see something, the eyes came out. When he wanted to smell something, the nose came out. So this is how it is spoken in the Bhagavatam, right? So similarly, Viral Purusha, we have spoken about that. That when Viral Purusha was created, the Vagindriyam means the power of the action, the speech, power of speech, yeah? Power of speech, its adhishtanam is talu. Talu means this where the tongue goes and touches, you know, where the tongue begins at that point, where the tongue comes out, right? Talu. So, talu is already there, and so, bhashana indriyam. Bhashana means the senses for the speaking, that is adhyalpam, pravarta shakti, the power to speak, all that was created together. power of speech, the power of speech, and the capacity to twist the tongue, to develop that speech power. All these things were created. Senses cannot work without there is some power behind it. So, when it wanted to speak, then the same tongue, it can speak and it can taste also. Two things in one. The tongue has got, which is connected with the talu, right? So, adhyatmam. Or adhyatmam, that means, in this sense, both the sense for taste and sense for speech, power of speech, one is karmendriyam, other one is jnanendriyam. Two senses are combined in one tongue. We are looking at it all from the gross side of it, isn't it? We are expecting two different things. No. In one thing itself, they were able to build the two together. Rasanendriyam and Bhashanendriyam. I mean speech, power of speech, right? Both has come from that. And all these things are discussed here. So, when it is speaking, its pravartaka shakti or power is coming from Agni. Agni is the predominating deity for power of speech. And Varuna is the predominating deity for tasting. Water and fire. Water for the sake of tasting and fire for the sake of speaking. And these two powers are combined in this tongue and kept it there, right? So, as pravartaka shakti. So, and then after that, pranan got involved in that. And then pranan, in order it has to exit from the body, you require some holes, and then the two holes have come. The nose has come after that. We think that Brahma had designed the body first. No, everything else, all this capacity was given to Brahma. How different bodies has to come into existence. And how the different senses and the mind has to work behind that, right? So these holes were created for the sake of pranan to go out. And that is how these senses have come. The nose has developed, become a sense for us. So in that nose, air entered and air has come as the power. So vayu has become the controller of the sense of nose, right? In that way, we started, got the power to smell. Power to smell. So this sense in the nose is able to smell, and it's also a passage for the air to come and go. To come and go. Then, so speaking samsaram, or speaking senses, right? Any topic we can discuss, right? And you can talk about it. So, its adhirup, adhyalpam, adhibhudam is talu. Talu means this part, right? Then, bhashanendriyam, or is adhyalpam, pravartaka shakti, or the power it operates, adhidevam. In this way, agni is the controller of that. Agni. That means with this one sense, that is why the tongue is so important, because it's got two senses under him, under the tongue. Isn't it? The power for speech and the power for taste. So the power for taste, Varuna is the predominating deity. And the power for speech, Agni is the predominating deity. So fire and water can work together. As well as, it's an unusual power, isn't it? Fire and water is able to work together. Right? So, and then what happened was, this jiva inside wanted to see the things in the world outside. He wanted to see them, experience them, right? And when that desire came up, these two holes came out. Eyes. Chakshugolam. They came out from that, right? So, in this way, like Viral Purusha, in the same way, that it has happened to the jiva in a gross body. It has happened, right? So, adhibhutam is the I, the sense, I, and adhishthanam is this disc inside in the eye, netragolam it's called. And there inside is chakshus, the indriyam, the senses is present there. And it is operated by the sun. Sun is the deity for that, right? So when sun entered, it eye will function. Eye can only function when the sun is present inside. Otherwise it cannot. He is the controlling power of the Pratishtadri Devata for the eye, right? So the rishis, what they have done, the mantrams, different mantram, what they have given through the Vedam, right? Vedam, Veda mantram. Viral Purusha wanted to hear the glorification of Viral Purusha through the Vedam. It wanted to hear. And when that happened, we got the ears to hear that, right? Viral Purusha is nothing but all living entities in this creation with all its senses. If you combine them together in one form of a person, then it becomes Viral Purusha. So that's what Viral Purusha means. Viral Purusha is an imaginary thing, but at the same time, it has relevance to our every jiva. Yeah. So all we, because after all, what is jiva in this world? Different names and forms, is it not? Different names and forms, and in that different names and forms, different species are made, is it not? Different species are made. And different species have got different senses also. Some have got five senses, some have got three senses, different types of senses. And plants and trees, they don't have that sensual perception like the way we have. So whichever way you take it, Viral Purusha includes everything in its totality. It's called Viral Purusha. But it is constructed in the form of a human form. In a human form. That's why it's called Viral Purusha. Virad it is called, right? So that Viral Purusha's adhishtanam, that when he wanted to wanted to hear, then these senses have come, ears have come, and Digdevadas, who are in different directions, the deities who are present in different directions, they entered into the ears. So, and there they have occupied the location is inside our ears, where they are present inside us, right? So, so therefore, adhibhutam is shravanapudam, it says. And then the sense there is adhyalpam, and pravartaka adhidevada, adhidevam, digdevadas are the adhidevadas, right? And the topic you are hearing is, or what you are hearing is the sense objects, right? Then after that, the last sense, which one is the sparsham, touch, sense of touch, right? When you wanted to experience something is soft or hard, or it's big or small, or if it's hot or cold, if you want to know that, when that desire came up inside, that when that desire came up inside, the skin got that power, skin. And that power, its adhishtanam, is the, or in other words, the skin is the sense of touch. Its adhishtanam is the skin. Adhibhutam and adhidevam. Adhidevam is Vayu, who comes and occupies that, right? So, this is how all the senses of knowledge has come into effect. That's what is discussed in this chapter. If you want to understand that, you have to sit down and write down each and every sense, adhyatmam, adhibhutam, adhidevam, for each one of them. And then you think over each sense, and then you will know why these different, how these are connected each other, adhyatmam, adhibhutam, adhidevam, with respect to each sense. You will understand the relationship there then. Sun connected with the eye, similarly, Digdevadas connected with the ears, Vayu connected with the nose, and all that. In the same way, there is also discussion here how the different senses of action, Karmendriyam, has come. So this is all talked about, first talked about Jnanendriyam, and then he is talking about Karmendriyam, right? So Karmendriyam, when he is talking about that, he is saying here, when you wanted to take something, the hands started working. That's how the hands have come into operation, right? So hand is the adhibhudam, or that's the adhishtanam. So, and then the vastu, or thing what you want to take like this, that is the adhyalpam, the indriya vishayam, right? And then indra entered into the hands, and it started operating. And that is the adhidevam. Indra is the adhidevam. Indra is the adhidevam, and senses are the adhyalpam, and the presence or the power of the hand to do that is the adhibhudam. So, for each sense, its adhishtanam is adhibhudam. For each sense, adhishtanam means that it is due to the power of that adhibhudam that particular sense is operating, right? And then the adhyalpam, indriyam, has become the, or the power of operating that indriyam, sense has become the adhidevam. Then the action of that indriyam, in this way each sense is spoken. Five senses of knowledge and five senses of action in relationship with adhyalpam, adhibodham, adhidevam. So 10 senses total, 5 plus 5, and 3 adhyalpam, adhibodham, adhidevam. So 10 times 3, 30 total. That's what is listed in all the verses there, how they have become, right? Similarly, another example, this talking about senses of action, yeah, karmendriyam. When you wanted to walk, at that time, the legs have come. And gadi, gadi means able to walk, that's what it is. Adhibhudam, that sense was there, and this adhyalpam. And the power that's operating is coming from Vishnu. And this is not the same Vishnu what you read in the Vedam. This is the Indriya Devada Vishnu, which is different, right? So that's Adhidevam. In this way, Viral Purusha had different desires, and the senses of all senses are based on the Adhibhudam, and the senses are the Adhyatmam, and the power which entered into that senses is the Adhidevam. The power that is entered into the senses is the Adhidevam. Is the Adhidevam. So, while creation happened, these power of senses were already born before we were born. Power of the senses were born, already present, right? And they entered into our body and started operating the senses. So that's why they are called Indriya Devadas. They have personality, but they are also a power that is born before us, and they are entering into our body and allowing the senses to work. Yeah. So this adhyalpam, adhibhudam, adhidevam, in this way, they are spoken. That's all. They are spoken, right? So in this way, the three types of creation. And this is what the variety of the creation, he says. Then it sense objects. And then the same creation, what is spoken in terms of adhyalpam, adhibhudam, adhidevam, chadurvidha srishti, that's also spoken in another way, in the sense. Adhibhudam is the foundation, basis of the senses. Adhyalpam is the senses. And the power of operation is called adhidevam. And in this way, four types. In that way also, it is spoken. So, and that is explaining here in another way. If you observe the creation, it says that creation is in four different ways. Here, first of all, it was spoken in the terms of Viral Purusha's form, right? So, Viral Purusha's creation is based on Krishna, Chidananda Swarupam. That means Sachidananda Brahmam as a foundation. Viral Purusha has been created by the Rishis. Rishis have created this Viral Purusha, right? And that subtle form of all this is, even though when we say Viral Purusha, that Sushma Rupam, which is beyond our perception, right? That is Viral Purusha. And it is that Viral Purusha is this creation. Creation is Viral Purusha. And in the form of Viral Purusha, we are experiencing this world now as Krishna, Krishna's manifestation, Ishvara's manifestation, yeah? Then it is actually the Viral Purusha. Viral Purusha is the one, this creation, it is, right? So, this creation is subject to our senses, is it not? It's senses that can connect with creation. So, these two Swarupam, what is spoken here, Ishvara Swarupam, both of them are linked to Maya. So that's what he is saying here. After saying all these things about creation, Brahma is saying there, they are actually Maya. It is Maya, right? This has to be very clear, because otherwise we will come to that later a little bit more to make understand this creation in the Upanishads, yeah, which is much more subtle than the creation in the Puranam. Puranam creation is easy to understand. Like we say in all other religions also, somebody created it, we say. Yeah, so we get satisfied with that answer. Makes it easier for us. A person has done that. He done all these things and he has gone. And he's somewhere resting after creation, right? That's not Upanishad creation. Upanishad's creation is like this. Upanishad's creation, to understand Upanishad's creation, the rishis did not go down into that route. Later on, Vedavyas in Puranams have made it up, Rishi's creation, in another way he presented it to us. So this Sargam, Visargam, what we are reading in the Bhagavadam, is a Pauranic way of saying things. Upanishad's way is different, right? First of all, to talk about creation, we have to understand, people only is interested, who did it? That's what they ask. Who did the creation? God created. So then they are satisfied, God has created. Yeah. So then some people will ask, who has created? God then. So then they will say, then, oh well, God was never created, he was always there. So then the person who is listening, you will say, that doesn't make any sense. Is it everything else somebody has created? So God also has to be created by somebody. Then personalists will say, I had my father who was created by my father, and he says he had his father and he had his father, like that. Finally we go back to Krishna. Then they will ask, who created Krishna then? Then this way this question goes on in the world all the time, in speaker's corner, everywhere. This is what is discussed very seriously. They discuss this. So the point is that creation we have to understand from the Upanishad's point of view, then this question won't come. This question don't arise then after that. And that's why it's so important to understand Brahman, Maya, and Ishvara, all these things. Brahman, Ishvara, Maya. Who are, what are they? If you have understood that, and they will clearly define in the Bhagavadam what Brahman is, what Ishvara is, what Maya is. And if you understand that, it will come in the Sudhi later. In many Sudhis it will come, this topic. You will realize it, that creation is not like the way we thought about it. Somebody came and created it and gone away. That's not how the creation is. Creation is Krishna. Creation is Krishna. Krishna means Brahman, Satta, Chitta, Anandam. Right? So, and what we see as creation is Brahman. So, and but it is all connected with Maya, right? So, Brahman cannot create anything on its own. Brahman cannot. Why? Brahman is pure. It is Satya-Chitta-Anandam. So, by definition itself, in Brahman, creation cannot happen. Creation cannot happen. Why I'm saying that is, if something comes from Brahman, that means it is subject to change. If something is changing, then it is not the truth. You understand? That is how Brahman is to be understood. Brahman, if something is changing, it's always something that doesn't change. If anything is changing, it means it's not truth. It should not change. First thing is, it should not change. And it should remain like that forever, without any change. So therefore, Brahman is pure consciousness. Pure consciousness. Satya, Chitta, Ananda. Yeah? That is pure consciousness, right? But, in that Brahman, what is known as Vidya Maya appears like that. It's not a change that's happening to Brahman. Remember that. It's not a change that is happening to Brahman. Vidya Maya appears, and that is why, what is that Vidya Maya, if you ask, we can't explain it. Some unusual power, unusual manifestation from that Brahman comes, which is called Vidya Maya. And Brahman, once it has come into Vidyamaya, has come, then Brahman is different. Brahman has another path, but pure Brahman remains as it is. It's not affected, right? So when Brahman joins with this, when this Vidyamaya develops, at that time Brahman becomes Ishvara. That's when it becomes Ishvara. When Vidyamaya comes, then Brahman becomes Ishvara. Brahman becomes Ishvara. In the sense, consciousness is still not affected. It's pure. Brahman is always pure. It doesn't go through any changes. But these are all pratiti for us, what's happening after that, right? So it is from the Ishvara creation has happened. Ishvara and Maya together created. Brahman has nothing to do with it. Ishvara and Maya has together created, right? And as the foundation for everything, because this Maya has to stay like this, creation is Maya. In order this Maya has to stay like this, Brahman's presence is required inside this. Brahman's presence is required, and that creation in which Brahman is present and giving us the experience of this creation, and that presence is called Viral Purusha. Do you understand this? Viral Purusha means what? All this you have to put a little bit of time to slowly go through it. Slowly. Otherwise it won't click. What's the difference between Viral Purusha and Ishvara? Ishvara and Brahman. Brahman and Maya. All these things. This is where it makes it difficult. From Rishi's point of view, because of the presence of this Maya, that's what makes it so difficult for us to understand this creation. Because it's a product of Maya. Only in Maya's presence this will happen, this creation. And she has done a very good job making us feel that this is real, one. And number two, it has also made us, all of us, to feel that everything is different. This is all Maya's power. Maya made us feel like this, that we are all individuals, we are all different, and this is all real. All this is done by Maya. In Brahman, it doesn't happen. Brahman's special power called this Maya comes, but Brahman doesn't go through any change. Brahman remains as Brahman. It doesn't stick to Maya. And Brahman, when Maya comes, Brahman is capable of controlling the Maya, whichever way it wants. But when Brahman is associating with Maya like that, it's called Ishvara. So Ishvara is nothing but Brahman's association with Maya. When Brahman associates with Maya, it's called Ishvara. And through Ishvara and Maya, the creation we are experiencing now, the way we are seeing it now, right? So, and this presence of Ishvara in Maya is called Viral Purusha. Viral Purusha, right? So these two forms, from the absolute platform, they are not true. This is another interesting thing. That although we talk about Ishvara and this Viral Purusha, neither of them are real. From absolute level. See, everything you have to look at from two levels. One from the absolute platform, other one from the relative platform. They are there only because Maya is there. And Maya is not real. Therefore, Viral Purusha is not real. Ishvara is also not real. When you study all these verses in the background of the Upanishads, that's how it is spoken, everything. Yeah. And this last chapter, where creation was spoken mainly based on the Adhyatmam, Adhibhutam, Adhidevam, the three differences, based on the sense, how 10 senses have come. And then finally after that, he spoke about last verse, if you look, 45th verse in the 10th chapter. Nasya karmani janmado parasyanu vidhiyade kartrutvam pratishedhartham mayayal arobidam tal arobidam hital. Maya is arobidam. It is imposed on by Maya. Mayayal arobidam hital, it says. It's imposed by Maya. Maya created all these things. Ishvara. Otherwise, we will... You see the differences between Ishvara and Brahmam. And similarly, Viral Purusha and Ishvara. This you have to give some time to get clarity on that. Why it's spoken differently. For what reason it is spoken like that. It will help a lot, because later on, when that's why sometimes when they use the word Ishvara, why they have used Ishvara, you will understand. Why they use the word Ishvara? Like in the Bhagavad Gita also Krishna says, isn't it? Ishvara sarvabhudanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtadi. So, it didn't say Brahmam at that time. When you are realizing, it is Brahmam. But when he is present in the body, is Ishvara. You see? And what that shows is that when you are in the absolute platform, in pure consciousness, all these are irrelevant. But when you are in the conditioned stage, all these are relevant. Ishvara is relevant. Very subtle things they are, and it has to be kept repeating many times. And if you also give some time to think through it, take some interest and seriously study these chapters, then you will understand why rishis have spoken in this way. Yeah. So here he is saying here that the absolute truth is pure consciousness. It's not touched by anything, right? Shuddha Bodha Suryupam, or pure Sachidanandam it is, right? So, Sachidanandam, in its solid form, when it joins with Vidya Maya, it becomes Ishvara. Ishvara is also Brahmam, but Sachidananda Brahmam, when it is in the presence of Vidya Maya, it is called Ishvara, right? So, and Ishvara's creation is this world, what we are seeing here. So, these two forms, Ishvara Swarupam and Vidya Maya together. So these are different bhavam of the Brahmam. Yeah. One is called Stulam, and the for example, Stulam Sushmam, gross and subtle, right? And the cause is Ishvara, and Ishvara's presence inside this Maya, which is associating with Ishvara, in both of them, Maya is present. Maya is present. In other words, creation is a srishti. Srishti is the creation, right? And in creation, Krishna is Brahman is present. In creation, Brahman is present. And similarly, in its subtle form, in Brahman, Maya is present. Maya is present in the Brahman. Maya is present in the creation, for creation purposes, not otherwise. Pure consciousness is not touched by anything. So, in the self-real estate, actually, what are you realizing? Pure consciousness, the absolute thing. At that point, these things become irrelevant. But when you are in the relative state, that means when you are in Maya, having a gross body and everything, you can only look at it this way, from another position, relative position. What is that? So, stulam, one is Ishvara, and one is this creation, prapancham, what is created, right? So, these two things is called stulam and sushmam, right? So, Ishvara is stula sushma bhavam, two bhavam, two modes of that, Ishvara and that this creation, Ishvara and creation, both of them are connected with Maya. Ishvara was born because Brahman and Maya combined. From that, Ishvara was born. Yeah. And creation was born, Maya combined with Ishvara. Creation was born. I don't know whether I'm saying. So, 35th chapter, if you look there, 35th verse. Amuni Bhagavad Rupe Mayate Anuvarnite Ubhe Abhinagrihnanti Maya Srishte Vipaschidaha. Even if you read the book, you won't get that clarity from that. It's a very difficult topic, that is, this 10th chapter. He's saying, Amuni Bhagavad Rupe Mayate Anuvarnite Ubhe Abhinagrihnanti Maya Srishte Vipaschida Stulam Sushmam. That is the 35th verse, right? Adaparam sushmatam sushmatamam avyaktam nirvisheshanam anadi madhyanidhanam nityangvang manasaparam. If you have not understood this clarity, not there, don't worry about it. It will be coming out later in other studies as well. So sometime it will click in some form. Yeah. So then it says here in the 35th verse, Mahalpas don't consider neither of them as real, Ishvara or the creation. Neither of them are real. Neither of them are real, right? So, beyond these two things, beyond Ishvara and beyond this creation, without being touched by Maya or by the creation, which has nothing to do with any of these things, is pure Sachidanandam, pure consciousness, right? And that is the reality. That is the only truth, it's saying here. So you see how difficult it is to define the truth. Once this Upanishads have so Brahmam, Satya Chitta Ananda, Brahmam, pure consciousness. It is so pure, it's so pure in the sense that by definition, by very definition, Krishna has defined this, that truth cannot go through any change. If any change happens, it has to remain the same all the time. It has neither beginning nor end, which remains the same all the time, only then it's called the truth. And that is pure Satya Chitta Anandam. That's his true nature. Then this unusual power called Maya comes. Where does the Maya come from? Maya is a manifestation from Brahman, but at the same time, Brahman is not affected by Maya. So, where did that come from then? It has come from Brahman only. It appears like that, and therefore it's only an appearance thing, this Maya. So everything that is connected with Maya has no reality. strictly speaking, from the absolute platform. If you look at it, it has no reality. But afterwards, everything what happened with Brahman and Maya together, which is Ishvara, that has come from that, that Ishvara and Maya has done all the creation together. Yeah. And we are in the middle of all these things. So we can only look at it through Ishvara and Maya. And we are seeing all that thing. And for therefore, it's all real to us. Everything looks real. But Brahman is not touched by Maya. We are touched. So that is what he is saying here. That neither of them has beyond these two things, now connection with Maya or nor connection with the creation is the pure Sachidananda vastu, pure Sachidanandam, right? Now, in order to get there, to realize this pure Sachidanandam, right? These two bhavam, Ishvara bhavam and this creation, they can help. They can help. Ishvara bhavam and this creation can help. That's all. But our goal is not to realize this or that, to realize the unchanging, what remains forever as pure consciousness. That's what we want to realize actually, ultimately. That's what we want to realize. Because that is our Swarupam. Our Swarupam is also pure Sachidanandam. Not the Swarupam what we got from Maya. That's not our Swarupam. Our Swarupam is that pure Sachidanandam. So, that is the goal, right? So, Shuddha Sachidanandam, that is our Swarupam. And in order to get there, these two, which one? Stulam Sushmam. Ishvara Bhavam as well as this Prapancha Bhavam of Ishvara. Ishvara is in the creation, in the form of creation, that can help, right? So Ishvara, again, Ishvara is a solid Sachidanandam. Kanibhuta Sachidanandam, it is called. And when it is coming in the form of this creation, it is a manifested form, stula form of the Sachidanandam, right? So, Viral Purusha is nothing but this Khani Buddha Sachidanandam. That means the solid Sachidanandam is the Ishvara, is the Viral Purushan. These two forms, Ishvara Bhavam, it makes the Shuddha Sachidanandam Brahmam. It can help. For example, this Ishvara realization can help us to get to Brahmam realization. Ishvara realization. So you see in Bhagavad Gita how Krishna puts that. Ishvara Sarvabhudanam Hrideshe Arjuna Tishtadi Brahmen Sarvabhudani Yandrarutani Maya. Isn't it? Tameva Sharanam Gacha Sarvabhavena Bharata Prasadal Param Shantim Sthanam Prapsyasi Shashadam. That is what will lead into Brahmabhuta Prasanatma, Brahmam realization. Nashojati Nagamshadi. So Ishvara realization is in one level and then it turns into Brahmam realization. Brahmabhuta Prasanatma, Nashojati Nagamshadi and all that, right? So, so it can only help us. That means Ishvara as well as this creation. Creation is Ishvara's presence. Ishvara's another form. Ishvara's form is this creation. So Ishvara and Ishvara Prapancham, or this creation, these two things, both can help us to realize that pure consciousness, Sachidananda Brahma. That is its importance. With this, the second canto finishes. This is the subject of this 10th chapter, the last chapter in the second canto, yeah? So with that, the second canto finishes, and you can see why Sridharajarya Swamiji in the beginning itself, he said that Ikshandam Ichaya Sandha Kshamandam Mama Sahasam Mayahi Suya Bhodaya Kramelna Sarvada, that I will try to explain this the way it was revealed to me, what I have understood, and you have to accept it in that way, that not with the intention that I will be able to make everybody understand what I am writing. That's not my intention, he says. The way I have understood, I am saying here about this chapter, particularly saying this, this 10th chapter, because it's such a difficult chapter to understand for unless it's spoken a lot in many times, and also everybody gives a lot of time to think about it, and gradually you will see, you'll get a lot of clarity from this chapter. Otherwise, this is a difficult chapter, this 10th chapter, yeah? So that's what basically it is. Whatever we have spoken, I don't know where we are. Then after that, the chapter, third and fourth canto is Vidura and Maitreya conversation, isn't it? So, why was that? This third and fourth canto was introduced in the Bhagavatam. This is another question to ask. Why this third and fourth canto was introduced in the Bhagavatam? To show to us that Bhagavatam has another Guru Parampara. We discussed one Parampara this morning. Narayana, Brahma, Narada, Vyasa, Sudha Goswami, Sudha Goswami, like that, one Parampara stayed like that. There is another Bhagavata Parampara. In order to present that Parampara, this third and fourth cantos were spoken. Because they are coming from a different Parampara. It is taken from there, right? So, in order to remember that Parampara, this third and fourth canto was spoken. So, Vedavyasa Maharshi, when he compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, he combined two Paramparas. You understand? Two Paramparas were combined by Vedavyasa Maharshi to write Srimad Bhagavatam, right? In this Parampara, the other Parampara began with Narayana, isn't it? This Parampara begins with Sangarshanamurti, Balaram. So, with Narayana, one Parampara we heard, so far what we discussed. Narayana, Brahma, Narada, Vedavyas, Sudha Goswami, Sudha Goswami. One Parampara we heard. So, Srimad Bhagavatam stayed with that Parampara. There is another Parampara, says here, which began with Sangarshanamurti, Lord Sangarshana, right? So, from Sangarshana is Adishesha, Ananta. And Adishesha instructed Bhagavatam to Sanal Kumara Maharshi, right? And Sanal Kumara Maharshi instructed Bhagavatam to Sanghyayana Maharshi. And he instructed that to Brihaspati. And Brihaspati instructed that to Parashara Maharshi, who is Vedavyasa Maharshi's father. So another Parampara came like this. Adishesha, which is Sangarshana. And from there, Sanat Kumara Maharshi. Sanat Kumara to Sankhyayana Maharshi. And from him to Brihaspati, and then to Parashara. And Parashara Maharshi instructed everything to Maitreya, and Maitreya instructed to Vedavyas. So that's another lineage, what you read here, right? So, and then Maitreya also instructed Vidura. So, Vedavyasa Maharshi is a disciple of Parashara, as well as his son, Parashara, right? But at the same time, Vedavyasa Maharshi is also a disciple of Narada Maharshi. He has two discipleship. Who? Vedavyasa. He has got two discipleship. One from his father, Parashara Maharshi is a disciple. And also Narada Maharshi is a disciple as well. That means actually Vedavyasa Maharshi has taken instructions from Parashara and also Narada. Narada Maharshi, the first part we saw, Narada Maharshi gave instructions to Vedavyasa. So he is a disciple of Narada. And then he is also received from Parashara, his father. So he is also a disciple there, right? So he compiled Bhagavatam using these both traditions. Vedavyasa Maharshi. When he compiled Bhagavatam, he used the parambara of Adishesha or Sankarsana Murti, Sanal Kumara Maharshi, Sankhyayana Maharshi, Maitreya Maharshi, and then Parashara Maharshi. Through that, whatever knowledge he has received, Bhagavatam through that parambara, he used it. And then he also used Narayana, Brahma, Narada, Vedavyas, and that knowledge, what he received from this parambara. Combining these two paramparas, he compiled this Bhagavatam, what we are studying now. You were saying last time that Vedavyas created all these verses. Vedavyas created all this. In its original state, there is no verses. The knowledge is being revealed inside. Experience level, it is happening, right? When we say, Aham eva sam eva agre nanyal sadasal param paschad aham yade decha yovashishyada sosneham, and all the four verses, hridayartham yat pradiyada, one verse, the four verses in the Chatushlogi. It was not verses that were given to Brahma. What was given to Brahma was realization of that, of the four verses. Its realization was given to him. And that is enough. And later on, Vedavyas has received this knowledge through the Narada Maharshi, and Vedavyas put that in the verse form and given to us. Given to us. Because we are only like this, the way we are. So even after verse form also, we are not working for us. Nothing is working for us. so that's the way it is, right? So this third and fourth canto, Vedavyas is actually speaking on behalf of this parambara, the second parambara, right? The first parambara was what so far we heard, and the second... So in that parambara, which one? The second parambara, starting from Sankarsana Murti and Sanat Kumara Maharshi, Sankhyayana Maharshi, and Maitreya Maharshi, Parashara Maharshi, Maitreya Maharshi, that parambara. What happened there is a discussion. And Vidura comes in that parambara. It is their conversation between Vidura and Maitreya is what is spoken in this third and fourth canto. Third and fourth canto, right? So, it is at that time when this situation happened, Parikshit Maharaj asked Sri Shukha Brahmarshi that how did this Vidura meets Maitreya? How did that happen? He said. So therefore, the first four chapters in this third canto, first chapter, up to the fourth chapter, is talking about how Vidura Maitreya conversation developed, and then the history behind that, how this parambara came in, right? Vidura left Hastinapur, you remember, in the beginning, first canto we saw there, and he decided to go on a pilgrimage. He started wandering around, right? And finally, how did he arrive in Maitreya's ashram, Maitreya Maharshi's ashram, which is in Haridwar? How did he get there, right? So, I hear that they had a discussion between Vidura and Maitreya, right? So, Shaunaga Rishi said to Sudha Goswami here, I would like to hear that discussion, what happened there, right? Because Shaunaga Rishi is representing all the rishis who are present in Naimisharanyam. It's on their behalf, right? So, when he said that, Vidura Maitreya conversation she wanted to hear, and that's what you find at the end of second canto. If you look at that 10th chapter, you will see Shaunaga Rishi saying that I would like to hear that conversation between Vidura and Maitreya, he's saying there. At the end of the second canto here. So, and then this whole conversation goes in another direction, right? So, Sri Shukha Brahmarshi, how he spoke to Parikshit about it, in that order, I will tell you, said Sudha Goswami says to Shaunaga Rishi, right? In that way, Sri Shuka Brahmarshi begins the third chapter, right? He begins the third canto, but then it becomes Vidura Maitreya Samvadam later. It begins with Sri Shuka Brahmarshi, but it becomes Vidura Maitreya conversation later, right? So, at this moment, Shuka Brahmarshi is saying to him that in the eighth chapter, Parikshit asked a lot of questions. You remember? Prashna Vidhi, it is called. The eighth chapter in the second canto. It's all Parikshit only talking. Number of questions he asked. It's about, and that, about 25 verses or so. Parikshit's questions, right? Ashrame deha sambandham, achivan isha jivayoho, bahun parishid aprachal, puranarthan bhubulsidan. That is Sridharajari Swami's commentary on that. He is saying that how come Ishvara, the same question everybody is asking, how come we were born, this jiva was born? Jiva is Ishvara, it's not different from Ishvara. But then how Ishvara became jiva? That question, right? So that is how that question begins. We are by our swarupam is Ishvara swarupam, Krishna swarupam, consciousness, isn't it? We are consciousness. Consciousness means Ishvara swarupam, Krishna swarupam. Krishna is pure consciousness. We are also consciousness. Sat, Chit, Anandam. This is our identity. So if we have the same consciousness as our identity, how come we have become a jiva? This is the question Parikshit has asked here. So Shuka Brahmarshi is bringing that back and he's saying to him that you have asked me this question and these are the same questions. What you are asking me, more or less it's the same questions what Vidura has asked to Maitreya. So it's easier for me if I tell you what happened between Vidura and Maitreya and you will understand everything. And therefore, and that Maitreya Maharshi has answered everything what Vidura has asked for, and that I will tell you now. Because actually Vidura would not have left home. He wouldn't have left home. There was no need for him to go, right? Vidura was very attached to his house, right? Very attached to his house. Not that he had he loved the house as much. Not for that reason. Because reason for Vidura's attachment to the home was many times when Krishna visited Hastinapur, he has come and stayed there in the house. Therefore, that house has become very dear to him. Krishna has stayed in this house. So therefore, he always saw the house where Krishna has stayed many times. And therefore, Vidura has a special attachment to the house from that side. Not like our attachment to the house. We're different. So his attachment was Krishna stayed in the house several times when he came to Hastinapur. And therefore he remembered all that and he felt very difficult to leave that house. Very difficult to leave that house. So, and many instances when he came to Hastinapur, even though Duryodhana invited him to come to his palace to stay, Krishna gave some excuse or the other and always stayed with Vidura. Never went to stay with Duryodhana. Right? So, Krishna used to say to Duryodhana, I'm going to my house. And in that way, and I'll eat from my house, he said, and he went to Vidura. So Vidura knew all these things, that how Krishna always chose to stay with him rather than with Duryodhana in the palace. He always kept Duryodhana at a distance, Krishna. Right? So, and Krishna has come, stayed there, taken food many times, and also rested in that house. So for Vidura, that house is a temple, as far as Vidura is concerned, right? So, and Krishna's lotus feet has walked in that house several times, and his dust has fallen in that. It's like a Vrindavanam for him, right? And that is what the beauty of that house. In other words, it was a holy place, holy spot in every way for Vidura, his house, right? So Vidura is seeing like that. And he always remembered the time he spent with Krishna in that house together, when they spent together. And always he used to remember that and feel happy about it, Vidura, right? And Vidura had the desire to live in that house for the rest of his life. This was all in his mind. But somehow or the other, situation changed. Everything changed in Hastinapur, and he had to leave home. He had to leave home. And with a lot of distress and unhappiness, Vidura left home. Vidura left home. And this situation happens in people's life, isn't it? So many things you think and plan and everything, something else happens. Something else happens. So even Vidura had to go through this. Vidura never wanted to leave that home because Krishna stayed so many times there, had taken prasadam together, they had a lot of discussions together. And therefore Vidura considered the place as such a holy place for him in every way. And therefore he felt he could not leave that place. He wanted to live his rest of the life there. But unfortunately it was not meant to be that way. He had to go, right? This happens with many Mahatmas. The similar situations have happened. One great sannyasi, he had many friends who had come to visit him. And one of the sannyasis was attached to one householder who was giving him a lot of help and who was very serious in spiritual life. The sannyasi used to go there and spend time with them talking about it. So, and in that place, this sannyasi had spent a lot of time discussing Srimad Bhagavatam. And together they had sung kirtans together, spent time together, right? So, in such a place that sannyasi has visited, that devotee was finding it very difficult because his attachment to that sannyasi's presence in there, right? So, there's a story in Ramakrishna's life. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa's life, similar situation. He had a devotee by name Balaram, who used to come to him, right? And Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, he has visited Balaram's home many times, and together they had kirtanam and everything. So, in one instance, that family, Balaram, they had a lot of land at that time. Land was the main wealth considered to be, right? And they were from the Vaishya community, this Balaram family. They were from the Vaishya community, right? Naturally, business and agriculture, that's their main occupation, right? And they had a lot of land in Bengal, and as well as in Orissa also, right? So, it so happened that they had property in different parts of Bengal. So the family wanted this Balaram to go and look after the property in Calcutta, right? They wanted him to go and look after the property in Calcutta, but he didn't want to go to Calcutta. Because in this house, Paramahamsa Ramakrishna Paramahamsa used to come and spend time with him. In them days, family means so many members in the family, isn't it? Brothers, sisters, they all live together, uncles, aunts and all that. So decisions are made by the elders. Balaram was not the eldest member, so decision was made. And the family senior members will discuss it together, how to manage the properties, because properties are at different places. And so they wanted Balaram to go to Calcutta to look after the properties in Calcutta. And he didn't want to go. He is the one who was close with Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. He didn't want to go, right? So, Balaram has gone for going to Calcutta and look after the properties there. He will be given a certain amount of money from the family to maintain himself, right? But at the same time, he knew that living will not be a problem there because they had the wealth. But this leaving Paramahamsas, Ramakrishna, and going there, he was finding it difficult. He did not know what to do about that, right? So at that moment, there was a discussion in the family, what to do about it. He was saying no, and the senior members were saying he should go. So they started thinking that if we put too much pressure on him to go, he might take sannyas and leave home and go away. If that happens, then what do we do? So that issue came up at that time, right? So, and when they were frightened like that, the other members in the family, they were not concerned about Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. They were not very attracted to him or attached to him. This is how everybody is not attracted all the time. It is always like that, right? So only Balaram was attracted to him, right? So his brothers, who Balaram's brothers, who were above him, they were all of the opinion, but they are all educated very much. Probably they went to university or something like that. So naturally, you know, when you are university educated, it changes everything, isn't it? So it is a wealthy family, and there were many members. And Balaram was not very well educated. Balaram somehow or the other didn't have much of an attraction for this higher education and all that. He was more attracted towards Ramakrishna Paramahamsa's life, right? So, and he will respect everybody because he has that culture in him, right? So, when this decision was made, it was almost a time for Ramakrishna Paramahamsa was going to leave the body. He was getting older and he was getting sick all that time, right? So they decided that Paramahamsa should go to Calcutta. You just see how Krishna's arrangement is. Balaram was hesitating to go to Calcutta. He did not want to go because from their village, wherever there were, Kumarpukur or something, there are mentions there, that they did not want to. He didn't want to go. But when Balaram was pushed by the brothers and other family members to go to Calcutta and look after the property there, he was having a difficult time how to leave the village and go there. He didn't want to go. At that time, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa became sick. And his close disciples who were present in his ashram decided that he should go to Calcutta for medical treatment or whatever that was present at that time, right? So, you know, at that moment, whoever it may be, you don't have any control on your fate. Whoever your so-called friends and relations, whatever they make the decisions, you will go along with it. You have no choice there, is it? You are not decision-making anymore. You are just lying there, ready to leave the body. And the so-called friends and the family and all, they will make the decision for you. And they will make the decision in such a way what is most convenient for them, which is the hospital. That's how it ends up all the time. That they will see that that's the best solution. And because they'll say that in the hospital we have got all the equipment, NHS will say to you that everything is there, we have got, if you bring him there, it makes it easier a lot. And you are helpless, whether you don't want to go to hospital or not, nobody's going to take into notice all that. You don't even have the strength to say anything. You will end up at the end in one bed, in the ICU or ICU. You will get there. And that's how it is, life is. So Ramakrishna Paramahamsa's life, even that also, it is gone in that way, that they are taken into Calcutta, right? And so he, anyway, Balaram was happy that he had to go to Calcutta, as much as his guru has gone there. And he was thinking that I'll get the opportunity to do some service now to my guru personally in there, right? And the brothers were saying to Balaram what all he has to do from management side of the properties and the wealth in Calcutta, those things. So at that time, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, Balaram will say everything to Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. This is what's happening at home. I'm not too keen on all these things, but this is the way it is. So Ramakrishna told him that he wanted to speak to those brothers, who Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, he wanted to talk to them. They were all big people, well educated, and you know, in the society like that. And so he wanted Ramakrishna Paramahamsa to come home and talk to them. So at that time, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa has thought about this, and he had a famous disciple called Girish Chandra Ghosh. And this Girish Chandra Ghosh, he sent him to talk to them, right? So Girish Chandra Ghosh was very good. He went up to these brothers and spoke to them about Ramakrishna's glories, how spiritually such a powerful personality he was, right? And these brothers, in Bengal at that moment, there was a situation, problem with Vaishnavas and the Shaktayas, right? So these brothers were Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers, right? They were respectful to everybody, but they were not very fond of this Paramahamsa's philosophy and everything. And they didn't know about him very much. They are mostly used to the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's traditions, right? But after talking to Girish Chandra Ghosh, they started seeing that Ramakrishna Paramahamsa also is a spiritual personality, and they changed their way of thinking about him, right? So Ramakrishna Paramahamsa sent a message that don't worry about Balaram. He's not going to become a sannyasi or anything. He will be at home whole lifetime, and don't worry that he will become a sannyasi. That's not going to happen, right? So the brothers were happy that they got a guarantee like this, that he won't take sannyasam and leave home, right? And so at that moment, when this happened, the brothers of Balaram did not force him anymore to do different things. They became a little bit more adjusting nature. With, you know, in family life how it is. You're living with some people and they're all putting pressure on you from different ways. Because in a big family, quite a few people are involved in the decision making, right? And you will observe all these things. Nowadays, this problem is not so big because family means husband, wife, and one or two children. That's it. Finished. But traditionally, it was never like that. There were so many members in the family. And therefore, decision-making was done through uncles, aunts, grandfather, grandmother. And so many people will be involved. And they will talk about everything, every issue, as far as marriage is concerned and things like that. They'll make the decision. So today it won't work. If you tell the girls or the boys that we have decided like this, they will say, who are you to make the decision on my behalf? They will ask, straight away put the question back at you, throw it at you, isn't it? So best thing is to stay like this all the time. So times have changed, that's what I'm saying. A generation, one or two generations, see how much changes have happened. You can see that, yeah? So in those days, you have to understand the background of the times then. The decisions were made in a family with all the elder members come together and they will talk about it. And it will be consulted and discussed a lot. And the decision will be conveyed to you whom you should marry. And if you say this in the new world today, they will find it's a very strange system, they will think. Would they not? They'll think like that. They won't understand. But that is how it used to be. Yeah. So here they felt concerned about Balaram and they conveyed this to Ramakrishna. So you can imagine they are all discussing this topic, what will happen to Balaram. And Ramakrishna Paramahamsa gave the guarantee to the brothers that he won't take sannyas and he will stay home. Right? So when they decided that Ramakrishna was going for treatment elsewhere and all that, then they had another plan that they wanted to move Balaram to Orissa because they had properties in Orissa as well. You know, in those days how it was, land was the main wealth and people had land at different places, properties at different places. Not too far, but it so happened that they all became landlords and big landlords. They had a lot of properties in so many different places. So they were thinking of sending him to Orissa then. But that didn't happen because on the assurance given by Ramakrishna, that was withdrawn from there. So in a similar way, that when this Balaram felt of difficulty in leaving home because of presence of Ramakrishna, in a similar way that Vidura also had happened this to Vidura, right? So he's asking this in the first chapter itself. In the second question, that is why that question has come up. What was the question? Yadva ayam mandrakaddo Bhagavan Akhileshwara Pauravendra Graham Hitva Pravivesh Almasalkradam. Second verse, you'll see. Shridhar Swami mentions there, Tridiyestu Trayastrimsha Adhyaye Sargavarnanam Ishe Akshaya Gunakshobal Sargo Brahmanda Sambhava Atradu Pranamodhyaye Bendu in Hitva Gada Ayushaha Nirgadasyu Udhavenadav Samvada Chaturuchyate. In 33 chapters in the third canto, Krishna's Leela called Srishti is spoken. And by Krishna's arrangement, by his sangalpam, Krishna's sangalpam, the three modes of material nature, how from Maya this creation comes. From Maya, how the creation comes. Right? And that is what is called a sargam. How creation comes from Maya is what is discussed in the sargam. Sargam, right? So, due to irreligious way of life in Hastinapur, Tirthayatra started for Vidura and he left all his relations and friends and family, everybody in Hastinapur and decided to go on this long pilgrimage. Lasted 36 years he travelled. And in that process, how he met up with Uddhava and Vidura and Uddhava conversation, how that developed, is all discussed in this first chapter. All discussed in this first chapter, right? So, and he says that why did he leave home? That's the question in that second verse. Pauravendra graham hitva privivesh almasalkradam, right? So, Sri Shukha Brahmashri is saying here that question, right? What kind of person is Krishna, right? I am. Shukha Brahmarshi is keeping his hand on his chest and saying that he is conscious all the time, Shukha Brahmarshi. Krishna is present inside as his very self, Andaryami, inside, right? And he is present in the heart in that way And it is that Krishna who has on your behalf went to Hastinapur. He's saying to Parikshit that, and that Krishna, I am Mandragraddho Bhagavan Agileshara, Pauravendra Graham Hitwa, Pravivesha, Atmasalkradam. Right? So, he was so good, Krishna, that he wanted to give you all the help, even willing to go on your behalf to negotiate with peace with Dhritarashtra and the Kauravas, right? And to such an extent, he was fond of Pandavas. He was fond of Pandavas. And you are so fortunate that you were taken care of by Krishna himself so much. And you are always fortunate. All Pandavas are fortunate. Shukha Brahmashri is saying there. And in that way, he's saying that Shukha Brahmashri glorifies Krishna, one who has shown unusual compassion and unusual love for the Pandavas. Shukha Brahmashri is saying there, right? And you are also part of that tradition of Pandavas who received all this help and mercy from Krishna. Krishna's mercy is difficult to understand. Who gets it and who don't get it? Yeah. Sometimes you do a lot of sadhana throughout life, you may not get it. And very difficult to understand that. This one principle, to whom Krishna gives the mercy. Especially in the Bhagavadam, you will see at certain places, this one thing comes up again and again. How do you get Krishna's mercy? Actually, important places are, like for example in the 10th canto, Krishna's pastimes, if you read. People who have received Krishna's mercy are all unusual people. People whom you thought were close to Krishna, they didn't get it always. It was always people who from somewhere they had come in their life and they received Krishna's mercy. And that's why it's so difficult to understand Krishna. In fact, when Kaliya was killed, Krishna jumped on Kaliya's hoods, isn't it? Different hoods, and started dancing there on top of the hoods. At that time is when Shukha Brahmashri says, Krishna is Akhila Galadi Gurur Nanartha. Then he is the master in the dancing, and master of all the arts, Akhila Galadi Guru Nanartha, who danced, right? So, after that, he jumped on Kaliya's heads, different heads, 1,000 hoods or something, and he was dancing on one after the other. According to, when Kaliya lifted one hood, he will jump on that. And when he lifted another hood, he will jump on top of that. In this way, Krishna kicked Kaliya from all the hoods. And he vomited blood and the poison also, which was inside. And finally, Kaliya became very weak and he fell unconscious and lying there. So at that point, Kaliya's wives glorifies Krishna in the Bhagavadam. At that time, they are saying to Krishna, as far as we know, our husband hasn't done anything good in this world. Except that he has poisoned a lot of people and a lot of people died because of him. And in our knowledge, he has not done anything good. In the sense that no pious activities or no salsangam or no chanting the holy name, any such thing we have never unheard of our husband doing. He was so wicked and cruel to others, and everything what he has done is only ended up in the death of some another living entity, right? Kaliya's poison was so strong that even the birds who were flying on top of the river, their wings used to get burned and they'll collapse into the water into the Yamuna river. And not only that, because of his presence, nobody could drink the water from there because of the poison present there. And all the other fish and everything used to die. So practically Kaliya made that place Kaliya Kridam. It's called in Vrindavanam, if you go, that place where he living was like that. Yeah. So then the wise are saying, but you are different. You have decided to give him the maximum mercy. Nobody has received mercy like Kaliya, like the way you have given him. That Krishna, even a dust from Krishna's lotus feet, the great rishis and the yogis, thousands of years they perform meditation sometimes at Krishna's lotus feet to get that lotus feet into their heart, to get that mercy from him. This Kaliya not doing anything, nothing he has done, but you have given him so much mercy. We may think Krishna has actually punished Kaliya. Actually, no, it is not like that. Krishna doesn't punish anybody. Even if when Krishna gives some punishment, it will only benefit that jiva later. It's never, Kaliya says there later on, that hangaram inside, ego, what I have created, that's completely gone when I got each kick from you. So that Krishna's compassion to Kaliya was that Krishna purified Kaliya by dancing on top of his head, and Krishna decided to give the punishment to Kaliya in this way. If it was not done, Kaliya could have gone to hell for a very long period of time. Krishna has decided to remove all that, instead punish him in this way and save him from a bigger hell which was going to wait. So actually, strictly speaking, this punishment is actually a blessing for Kaliya. For Kaliya it's a blessing. And many, many great yogis and jnanis and devotees, they would like Krishna to put his feet on their head. They are looking for that, but they are not getting it. In spite of their years and years of penances and austerities and sadhana, they don't get it. Kaliya got it. And Kaliya's wives are saying, we still don't know why he got it. And that's how that Nagavatni studies in the Bhagavatam goes. They are saying there that we cannot understand what made Kaliya qualified for this, to receive this mercy, which nobody gets it normally. So there it is mentioned that it is impossible to know who will get Krishna's mercy. There is no, that is a problem in spiritual life. There is no rules for anything. As far as Krishna's mercy is concerned, you may have done a lot of sadhana throughout your life. You won't even have any experience of Krishna throughout, even at the end of your life. And you may leave this world in that way, without any experience of Krishna. Everybody does sadhana with the hope that one day you will get some experience of Krishna. But it can end up like that. And some others who haven't done anything in their life, they got it, some experience with Krishna. And they got it like that. So even sadhana is not a guarantee that you will have it. So, and on what basis Krishna's mercy comes, nobody knows about that. Yeah. So here he is saying here that Parikshit Maharaj, as far as sadhana is concerned, he has not done very much, isn't it? So from all these things, you got to think in a different way, that we are used to people in this world. We are used to the one thing: I work, I get the result. I work, I get the result. This is the way we are conditioned to think. But in spiritual life, if you bring that principle, it won't work. That's the important thing. Normal life, we are used to doing and getting, doing and getting, isn't it? Everybody in this world, we got used to that concept, that I worked very hard, we say, and I got this result. So if you bring that concept into spiritual life, you will fail. You'll fail. Because you won't know what actually pleases Krishna. Why Krishna decides to give mercy to somebody and not to give somebody else. That nobody knows. And that is in the Bhagavatam throughout. Throughout Bhagavatam it is there. This one principle to know. That means it's not by your work that you get it. It's by Krishna's mercy that you get Krishna. To get this principle, this concept clear in our head, that it's not by my work I get it, it's by the mercy of Krishna that we get it. That's why while doing the sadhana also, we have to be conscious of this factor. So he's saying here, the same thing in Bhagavatam, for example, if you look at Parikshit's case, Parikshit was a king, emperor, and he was performing he was not doing 16 rounds a day or anything. He just went along with his responsibility, what was given to him, And he was hunting, and this happened, and Shamigha Rishi, he upset Shamigha Rishi, Shringi, and Shringi cursed him, and then he knew that in 7 days he'll be gone. So at that moment he decided that now I'm going to think about Krishna, I want to hear about Krishna before I leave the body. So Shubhabrahma Rishi is saying to him that, look at your own life, he said, that you are very dear to him. You are very dear to him, right? And he had so much love for you, Krishna had, right? Is it not that reason that why he protected you from Ashwatthama's Brahmastram, right? Not only he did that, he gave you, Krishna gave you his vision while you were in the womb of your mother. He entered into your womb, right? And in this way, you have become somehow dear to him. Dear to him. So, as I mentioned before, there were very few people who have seen Krishna in the womb. Not many. If you study the whole Puranams, you will find there's not many people who have seen Krishna inside the womb before he came out, right? So, Shubhabrahma Rishi is saying there, compared to Pandavas, Krishna was more fond of you. That's why he has come and seen you in the womb itself. Pandavas, Krishna has seen them only after they came into this world, right? So, and Krishna has thought about you that you are his man, even while you were in the womb. So, you were able to experience that while you were in the womb. And you had done experienced that throughout your life, right? So, Shubhabrahma Rishi is saying here that you are more fortunate than them, right? And then he said that when Krishna went to Hastinapur before, every time he will say to others that I am going to my house. With such an attachment, he used to go to Vidura's home, right? And he will accept Vidura's hospitality and live there. Never accepted Duryodhana's hospitality. So that house was very dear to Vidura, and Vidura's attachment to the home was well known, and Vidura, if it was possible, he would have stayed there. The situation developed so difficult for him that he had to leave. That's how he left home, right? So at that time, that story is coming in the next few verses. The background or the circumstances which forced Vidura to leave home. That is what is spoken. Look at the sixth verse. Shri Shuka Uvacha. Yada Duryaja Sasudana Sadhun Pushnana Dharmena Vinashta Drashti Braduriya Vishtasya Sudan Vibhandun Pravesha Laksha Laksha Bhavane Dadaha. Dhritarashtra was looking after his children, sons, right? And they have gone in the wrong direction. And they had some wicked plans in their mind, who Duryodhana and others. And Dhritarashtra supported that in that way that he has lost all his sense of discrimination. Who? Dhritarashtra. Lost all sense of discrimination. And then, you know, so many things happened in Hastinapur. When Pandavas were young boys, they were sent to Varanavadam to see a festival there. And there they created this house with the wax, or what do they call it here. And in there they were asked to stay. You know all the things, what happened at that time. He stayed there. And they set fire to that house in the night. And somehow the other Vidura knew, sensed all these things, informed them to escape from there. and they escaped. Right? So Vidura knew that Dhritarashtra was behind all these plans to kill the Pandavas. And they were trying one after the other. So when Vidura got to see these things, he realized that this is not a place for me. I couldn't support this Dhritarashtra. It's his brother also, elder brother, Dhritarashtra. So I can't support them, he said. And that's the way it is spoken. Different things are spoken. What happened before that? Yeah, number of things are spoken there. So, when Duryodhana made some demand, Dhritarashtra will agree with this, whether it's good or bad, right or wrong. He won't look at it, right or wrong. If son is asking something, it should be given. That was his attitude. So in this way, he encouraged these Kauravas, the 100 of them, to go through the wrong way in life. And therefore, it became very against the principles of dharma. And Vidura could not tolerate that, because Vidura is dharma personified as come. He could not accept adharma. So, instead of persuading them to leave this process of adharma, Dhritarashtra went with that all the time, right? Due to his attachment to them. That was what it is, blind attachment to the children. So, and Dhritarashtra has brought them up in that way, these children, right? So, whatever Duryodhana says, even if it is very bad thing, wicked things, Dhritarashtra okayed everything. He will go along with that, what they have asked for. Yeah. So, only purely blind attachment. That's all it is. Blind attachment. Due to that, he could not give any instructions to Duryodhana and the other brothers. Dhritarashtra could not tell them anything. Many times, Dhritarashtra knew it was a wrong thing, but he couldn't say anything to them. Right? So, only because of his blind attachment to Duryodhana. And he was aware of that. Who? Dhritarashtra. That he is doing the wrong thing, right? And Duryodhana, on the other hand, was a highly wicked character, very wicked in his mind, and Dhritarashtra was helpless to do anything about it, and he only knew, he kept going along with it, instead of any time saying no to him, he continued allowing him to do what he wanted to do, right? And at a certain stage, Dhritarashtra could not do anything anymore. That situation has happened like that. So, day after day, this is all happening very gradually. You have to remember that also. That they are all living together in Hastinapur. And Duryodhana is making plans. It's happening in one palace, this whole thing, right? Duryodhana is making the plans how to kill the Pandavas. And these plans, one after the other, he is trying to execute. His whole aim is to destroy the Pandavas so that the kingdom is theirs forever. The problem was that Pandu's children they are. Pandu was entitled for the kingdom. Dhritarashtra was blind. Pandu should have the kingdom. But due to Pandavas being very young, they was handed over this Duryodhana. Dhritarashtra was still managing through the help of Duryodhana and other sons. So the situation was complex, and you can imagine that they are living like this for years, like this going on. These children are growing up, and while they are growing up, Duryodhana is plotting all these things to kill them, kill the Pandavas. That's what they want, so that they don't become a problem when they grow up. Anticipating that, he is trying to kill them now. Who? Duryodhana. So this is how the Kshatriyas are, that they want this wealth and position and everything, right? Pandu died, Kunti became Kunti Devi became widow, right? And Madri gave up her body. Kunti and Madri were Pandu's wives. Madri gave up her body by jumping into the fire, right? So in this way, the rishis were all fond of Pandavas. And Kunti Devi and the Pandavas spent some time under the shelter of the rishis. Rishis looked after them, right? And then the rishis spoke to them and told them that you should also give shelter to the Kunti Devi and the Kunti Devi and the Pandavas, yeah, right. And all this discussion is going on in Hastinapur, and at that time, Bhishma was the senior most member in the family. So Bhishma agreed to allow them to come and live in the palace, Kunti Devi and the Pandavas, right. So with Bhishma's permission only, that Pandavas and Kunti Devi were brought to Hastinapur and started living in the palace. And it is at that time, and that is how they arrive in the palace. They arrive in the palace in that way. So, based on the law prevalent at that time, only the son of the king is entitled for the kingdom, the next one, right? So, the king is actually Pandu, and Dhritarashtra is blind, so he has no right for the kingdom. And Dhritarashtra cannot become the king. So, but Pandu has become the king. But Pandu was very respectful to Dhritarashtra. They were like that, right? So Pandu has given a lot of freedom for Dhritarashtra in making decisions. He has also a lot of power, Dhritarashtra also, right? And, but actually the king was Pandu. But Pandu, as at the same time, accepted whatever decisions Dhritarashtra was making, it was also respected by Pandu, right? But unfortunately, Pandu, who was cursed by the Brahmanas, could not get any children at that time. So he went to the forest to perform penances, right? But Pandu did not come back from the forest, right? In that way, Dhritarashtra started the administration. That's how he took over, right? So, you know how the Pandavas were born. We call them as Pandu's children, Pandavas. But Kunti Devi begot them in a different way, isn't it? So, Durvasa Maharshi blessings and all, if you read Mahabharatam, you'll find all that background behind it. So, Dhritarashtra started the administration, even though he was blind. He thought that now I can be the emperor forever. And in that way, the Pandu who was living in the forest, Pandu had children from Kunti and Madri due to the mantram, what was given to them by the rishis. Through the mantra siddhi that they begot the children, right? So Gandhari also, Dhritarashtra's Gandhari also had these children. So even though he is blind, who? Dhritarashtra? He was not blind. Even though he is blind, he was more conscious of everything, what was going on in the forest with the Pandu, what has happened to Kunti Devi, what was happening to Madri, everything was known to Dhritarashtra. Some people say Dhritarashtra was blind, but actually when you read all these things, there is no sign of any blindness in him. He was more than aware of everything what was going on in the kingdom, right? So Pandu left his body, and when Pandu left his body, Dhritarashtra came to know about that, and Madri gave up her body in Pandu's funeral pyre. He jumped into it and gave up her body. So when this happened, in order to perform the rites after the death, while body is being burned, or you have to do the funeral rites, in order to perform that, he should have brought Kunti Devi and Pandavas from there. He didn't do anything. He just acted, he doesn't know anything what has happened. That's the way the Dhrashtra behaved, right? So he didn't even inquire about Kunti Devi. So what I'm saying is, when these things are happening there, people are observing what is happening in the palace. You know how it is. Palace, everything what happens is monitored by the people. Even today, isn't it? It's like that. So, but the difference is that this family, Kauravas and the Pandavas, and the Bhishma, they were so pivotal to the whole planet, because Hastinapur was the capital of the world at that time, and they were ruling the planet through them. And it mattered a lot what was happening within the royal family. And Bhishma was there, and if you look at all their life, you can see that they had a big effect on the whole population. So people were talking about it, and particularly the rishis. Rishis were very concerned what is going on about it, right? It is the rishis who performed all the Sheshakriya, that's what it's called. Sheshakriya means after death, all the ceremonies are connected with that. Rishis performed everything for Kunti Devi, for Pandu. This Dhritarashtra didn't take any notice of it, nor organize anything for them. And from there, rishis understood that Dhritarashtra had different plans in his head, right? So they started thinking that. For some time they maintained. After all, rishis are not interested in maintaining people. They have their own business to do. Go to forest and perform their austerities and penances. That's what they want to do. But somehow the other circumstances turned up in this way, that Kunti Devi and the children has come under their shelter. And now you can't do anything because mother and its 5 small children, what do you do with them? So they protected them and looked after them for some time. Who? Kunti Devi and the children. The rishis took them in their care and maintained them in their ashram in the forest. For some time they looked after them. But then they decided that Kunti Devi should go back to palace. After all, Pandu should have been the king, which means Kunti Devi has a right to stay in the palace with the children, and they should be taken care of. So they go back to the actually, he is entitled, Yudhishthira, for the position as the king, because he is the son of Pandu, right? So, and that Yudhishthira is now in the forest, living there in the rishi's ashram, right? So, rishis decided that they will go to Hastinapur and speak to Dhritarashtra and Bhishma and get this sorted. And they all go to the Hastinapur. We'll discuss it tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.